are listening to a message from Stonegate Church. For more information about Stonegate and additional audio resources, please visit stonegate.church.
We are in Joseph, and we're neck deep. We've been in it for a minute, and I hope it's been life-giving to you. I hope it's been helpful. It has been so good for me. Joseph's story is wild, and we all know this. Following Joseph's story feels a little bit like watching the stock markets. It is up, and it's down, and it's up, and it's down. When we meet him in Genesis 37, he's on the rise, right? It's going up. He's the most beloved son of his father, Jacob. His dad gets him a Louis Vuitton coat. He's looking fly. He has a dream where he is seeing his family bow before him. So he's going to be in a place of authority one day. Things are up and to the right, or so it seems for him. And then market crash, right? His brothers get jealous of him. They begin to hate him. They throw him in a well, and then they sell him into slavery. Right? This is 1929 stuff. Great Depression. We're down here. Okay? And then rise. Right? As he's purchased by a man named Potiphar, who's the captain of the guard. And the text says that the Lord was with Joseph, with Potiphar. And so Joseph begins to grow in authority. He becomes the head of Potiphar's household all of a sudden. He's in charge of all his stuff. He's in charge of all his people. What kind of Hebrew slave gets this kind of status? I mean, it is a bull market. We are buying. And then market crash, right? As Potiphar's wife falsely accuses him of rape, and now he's thrown into a dungeon. His reputation is tarnished, and he's left there alone. And what's going on, and how is he going to get out of this thing? I mean, this is Fannie Mae. This is Freddie Mac, all right? We're down here again. And then rise, right? Because God continues to be with this man even in the dungeon. And so we see Joseph taking on authority in the prison. The prisoner is now running the prison. He becomes buddies with some of the guys in there and is interpreting their dreams for them. He gets it right. And one of the guys who he gets right gets out. And on his way out, he says, "I will never forget you. You're getting out of here with me," right? This is Joseph's turn. This is where we're going to see him finally get out, right? This is the rise. And then crash. Verse 23 of chapter 40, the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Get your N95 masks, right? 6 foot of distancing. It's virtual church. We are down here again, okay? This is where we left off last week. For 2 more years, God's man sits in this dungeon utterly alone and forgotten about. What is to become of his dreams? What about God's promises to the patriarchs, to Abraham? Is that going to be realized? Is God going to be faithful? That's where we pick up today in Joseph's story. And what we're going to see this week is that though, yes, the cupbearer had forgotten about Joseph, Joseph's God had never forgotten about Joseph. Joseph's God had Joseph on the forefront of his mind. And in fact, what's really going on is this is all part of the master plan. Like, I don't know if you know this or not, or if you've picked up on this in our series so far, but God's smart. He knows what he's doing. He is playing 4D chess here, and right now he's kind of moving the pieces into sort of their final positions. And he's doing this not just to provide rescue for Joseph. We're going to see that's going to happen. But through Joseph's rescue, he's actually going to be providing rescue for the entire world. And so if you're looking for like a headline over chapter 41 today, you could do a lot worse than something like this. That what this is about today is this, that God blesses his people to be a blessing to people. What is chapter 41 about? That God rescues us from the pit so we can show the world the rescuer. That's what we see here in chapter 41. So if you have a Bible, get it out. We're going to be reading quite a bit today in it. And we're going to start just right at the top, chapter 41, verses 1 through 8. I'm just going to read this section for us again. And it says this. After 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. And behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke. And he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on 1 stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the seventh plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning, his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. So this is a very weird scene. It's a very weird dream, and there's a lot going on here, but I don't want you to miss sort of the meta thing that's happening. What's really going on in this moment in Joseph's dream and his interaction with people? Here we have a person who is deeply troubled by a vision of life that he's seen, right? And when he goes to the people around him for answers, nobody can help. That's what this is. And do you see, this is really, it's Pharaoh's story, but it's also our culture story. This is our culture right now. We right now, Christian, live in a world that's really troubled by what they are seeing. Like, you don't have to be like a brain surgeon to look around and go, oh, something's not as it should be here. Our culture is looking around and we're seeing the breakdown of the family. We're seeing a generation marked by anxiety. We're seeing things like depression on the rise and sort of all levels, loneliness on the rise. Civil discourse is going down and down, and people are looking around and they're asking the question today, hey, what does this mean? Right? And they do what Pharaoh does. They take those questions and they go back to themselves. They go to their culture and they show up to their wise men and they go, make sense of this for me. And our culture is ready with 1,000 answers for them, right? Some people look at them and they go, I'll tell you what this is. Here's where the trouble is. The trouble's political. Right? That's the real issue in the world today. And so what we need is a new set of laws, or we need a new set of judges, or we need a new president, or we need no president like this. But it's a political issue that we have going. And others look at that and they go, no, that's not it. It's actually an economic thing. You need to be on the come up. You need to make some more for yourself. You need to stabilize you to prepare for the future and for your family and your children's children. But it's an economic issue that has you so down in the dumps. So we need to work on that. Others look at that and they go, no, it's not these big systemic things out here. It's you. It's who you are. It's a mental thing. So we need to get you psychoanalyzed and pump you full of medicine and then get you back out there, get you back to health, right? That's the issue that you have mainly in your life. And folks look at that and they're like, no, it's not that. It is you, but it's not your mind. It's your body. The problem is you're not okay because your body's not okay. So we need to just biohack the mess out of you, right? We're going to get some gut health going. You're going to stare at the sun for 30 minutes a day, burn out your retinas. That's going to get you to feel a lot better, right? But do you see, everybody's got an answer. We've all got the, and they're throwing them, and they are so unsatisfying. These are unsatisfying answers. Eventually, our wise men fail us, and when they do, where are people meant to turn? Can I tell you where they're meant to turn? To us. They're meant to turn to when the wise men of culture fail, it's time for the people of God to speak up. That is what we're seeing, not just in this text, but right now. Like in our culture, we're seeing that. Like, I don't know if you know or follow the stats or whatever, but we're in an odd moment in Western history where in America, we're starting to see church attendance on the uptick a little bit. Like, when was the last time you ever said that? That's a weird thing, and it's being led by the youngest generations. Gen Z is starting to come back into the church. We're seeing right now Bible sales up in the U.S. about 23 to 30% right now. Something is going on. People are beginning to go, okay, I'm troubled by what I see, but my culture doesn't have any answers. Do you guys? And this is our moment to say yes. This is our moment to speak up. And this was Joseph's moment to speak up too. And so he is called up from the pit to provide some answers. Verse 9 says this, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today, which is Egyptian for, oh dang, I knew I forgot something. This guy just spent 2 years just with a brain fart about Joseph. Oh my gosh, Joseph, yes, there was a guy. And so what he does is he looks at Pharaoh and he says, hey, I know a guy. I know a guy who interprets dreams. He did it for me not too long ago. It's 2 years, but that's not important. And he can do it for you, I'm pretty sure. Would you like me to go get him? And you remember what happens, verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. And they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream. And there's no one who can interpret it. And I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Now, don't miss the humbling move this is by Pharaoh. This is the king of Egypt going, I would like some advice from a Hebrew slave. That's a weird thing that just happened. Pharaoh's desperate. The wise men of my culture have failed me. Can you help me? That's what he's saying. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it's not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. What a great response. This is how we talk, believers. A Christian is someone who knows they're not the hero of the story they're telling, that we're not at the center of this thing. This is the tenor of all of Scripture. You go to the New Testament, Paul talks like this in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. He says this, but we, Christians, have this treasure, the news about Jesus and what he's accomplished for people. We have that treasure in jars of clay, like cheap, breakable jars of clay. That's us, to show why the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. We have something, but we aren't something. It's not me I have anything to offer. And that's what Joseph says to Pharaoh. He looks at Pharaoh and he says, hey, I'm not your help, but I know the one who is. That's what he says. And what Joseph does next, really for us, is a study in how to engage culture well. We're going to notice he does three things here. He's going to listen to Pharaoh's troubles. He's going to interpret those troubles, and then he's going to show him a way out. So he starts by listening. And if you see in the text, Pharaoh just recounts the story again. Seven healthy cows, seven sick cows, seven ears of grain, seven withered ears. Here's the story. This troubled me. Listen to me. And Joseph settles down and listens. And then after listening, he decides to speak, and he interprets those troubles. Verse 25 says this. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Now, again, all of these sentences, go slow when you read your Bible. These are packed sentences. Do you know what's amazing about that sentence? No one talks to Pharaoh this way. Are you kidding? God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do without consulting you. Are you kidding me? Do you know who this guy is? The pharaohs in Egypt weren't just kings culturally. They were worshipped by the people as gods. So the subtext here, do you hear it? Is you're not who you think you are. We're just going to start there. There is a God, but buddy, it ain't you. Right? That's what he's saying. And this is so what our world needs to hear, is it not? Like, there is someone bigger than you. So much of the anxiety we carry around in our culture is bound up. It starts with this issue of thinking that we are the center of the universe. Do you know how heavy the universe is to wear on your shoulders? If the buck stops with you, of course that would stress me out. This is what our culture does, and it's too heavy to carry. One of the first gifts that the gospel gives anybody is to tell us you're not the center of the universe. And that's what Joseph's doing here. That's where Joseph starts with Pharaoh. He says, there's a God who's up to things. He's not consulting you. He's in the heaven. He does whatever he pleases. Okay, we're going to begin there, Pharaoh. Okay. And then he goes on to interpret his dream. He says, hey, there's going to be seven abundant years. And it's going to be followed by 7 years of famine. So there's a real crisis coming. It's going to feel good for a bit, seem good for a bit, and then it's going to get really bad. So he interprets his trouble. He's saying, hey, there's a reason you feel scared. It's because it's about to get really scary. You're not wrong to feel like there's something wrong. There is bad news coming. What a responsible, kind, pastoral thing to be able to look at somebody and give them the bad news. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're scared to do that. We don't want to upset the apple cart. We want to stay away from that. And here Joseph is. He's talking to the most important man in the known world. And he's going, let me give you some bad news first. That takes courage. But bad news, the good news only makes sense against the backdrop of the bad news. That's the only way the good news makes sense, is if the bad news is heard. I remember, I didn't clear this with my family, but my daughter Sophie, when she was a kid, five or so, she was a tyrant. She was a monster. And I love you. And we're trying to get the gospel into her world. And one of the ways that Kelly would do this when she was young, she had a really meaningful conversation with her when she was five. She got down with Sophie and she just looked at her and she goes, "Sophie, sin will kill you." Anybody talk to their five-year-old like that? You should. You should. Because something clicked in her mind, in her heart. She felt the stakes. She felt the weight of it. We're not messing around here. This stuff is deadly that you're tampering with. You don't mess with this stuff. It's right to give the bad news before the good news, and that's what we see Joseph doing here. But notice, he doesn't leave him in the bad. He doesn't leave him there. Joseph interprets his trouble, but then what does he do? He shows him the way out of it. So verse 33, "Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the seven plentiful years." So what's he doing? He's giving him the roadmap out of the trouble. Hey, here's what you need to do. In light of that bad news, here's the responsible thing to do. You need to start storing up some grain for yourself. We need to get ourselves ready for a famine. You need to appoint somebody to manage this. He's bringing some wisdom to the table and going, disaster is coming, but there is a way of escape. Here is the roadmap out. I mean, this is good cultural engagement. He listens, he interprets his trouble, and then he shows him the way out of it. Now, don't miss, again, this is a Hebrew slave talking to the king of Egypt. What is about to happen, right? What is Pharaoh's response? He's going to smoke him? Look at what he says, verse 37. "This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, 'Can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God?' Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has shown you all this, there's none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house and over all my people, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you.'" Market rise. Yeah? Joseph has just gone full Drake on us. Started from the bottom, now we hear. Okay? Pharaoh just set this man over his entire house. Not like his house, like the empire, like Pharaoh's house. He is second in command in Egypt. He just gave Joseph Pharaoh's signet ring, which is a sign of authority. Verse 43 says, he made him ride in a second chariot. He's got the company car now. And commentators tell us that what all this means, all these things that Pharaoh's given, all this means that Pharaoh has made Joseph his grand vizier, which if you've ever watched Aladdin, you know what that means. Joseph is Pharaoh's Jafar. Hopefully a nicer one. It's an amazing thing, isn't it? This is a Hebrew slave who is now at the top of the world's highest superpower. How? What in the world? But there's more going on here than just something for Joseph. This is breathtaking. We're going to talk about that. But the line that comes toward the end of Pharaoh's discourse is powerful. He looks at him, and in verse 45, this happens. "After all that," says Pharaoh, "called Joseph's name," he's going to rename him, "called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah." Now, it doesn't give us the translation here, but the translating of this name, it's tricky. It can mean various things, but here's one of the translations of the name he just gave Joseph. "God has spoken and lives." This man, who moments earlier was convinced he was God, has now met the wisdom of God. And he's going, "No, I've heard God speak now. He lives. I have heard someone greater than me, and I pay homage to him." God rescued Joseph in this moment, and that's obvious. That's on the page. But what we need to not miss is that he is using Joseph's rescue for Pharaoh's good. Pharaoh, the polytheist, self-proclaimed God, is getting mercy from the one true God through Joseph's story. Is that not beautiful? Our God is a missional God, y'all. God's care for you does not stop at you. It's never meant to stop and terminate at you. We are conduits of his grace. It comes to us and through us. It's meant to always flow out to others. And 41, this chapter gives us that in a huge dose. Don't forget what the backdrop is to Joseph's story. Don't forget that his whole story really kicks off three generations earlier as God plucks his great-grandfather Abraham up from being his own polytheist in the land of Ur, and he looks at him and he makes some promises to this man. Do you remember this? If you were back with us at the early part of this series, long ago, we looked at God's promise to Abraham, who is his great-grandfather, and here's what he says to Abraham. Chapter 12, verses 2 and 3, "And I, God, will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, Abraham, all the families of the earth shall be blessed." The plan, God's plan from the beginning was never just to just do this little Jewish nation thing. It was never so small as that. God has always been playing the global game, and he chose a man to bring that mission to fruition. And Jacob and Joseph, these are men who are in that line of our missional God who is doing something global. God is fulfilling his purposes in a real way right here in chapter 41. He is making Joseph into a man who's about to be able to bless Pharaoh, pagan king, and then the nations by extension. And as we're going to see, it's going to go all the way to the cross of Christ, where the final Joseph comes. That's where it's heading, but right now we're getting a little foretaste of that. Our God is a missional God. He is global, and we're about to see just how missional he is here at the end of 41. Look at what happens. Verse 53 says this. "The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt, there's bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to the Egyptians, 'Go to Joseph. What he says to you, do.'" Stop right there. I love that line. That's my favorite line of this text. Go to Joseph. I'm the God king. But go to this Hebrew slave. I think he has the answers for you. It's an amazing thing that Pharaoh would say this. When the struggle gets real, God's people are meant to be a refuge. We're meant to be the people that our culture looks at and goes, there's something else going on there. What do you have that I don't? What do you know that I don't? Give me some of that, because I'm looking here and all I'm seeing is brokenness. Is that who you are, Christian? In your culture, in your circles, are you the person with the people you run with that they see you and go, whatever, I'll have what he's having. I want that. Because there's brokenness here. And I need more of what you have tasted and seen. I'll never forget, I had a guy I sat next to in college. His name was Ken. We had a class together, and he is didn't want anything to do with God. He was just kind of a hedonist, just kind of living his own life. Party, pleasure, all of that stuff. But we got to know each other. We were study buddies, all that. And I had the opportunity to share the gospel with him a number of times, and it was profitable. It was good. But it didn't go anywhere tangible. Okay, we graduate. Fast forward 2-3 years. I don't hear from this guy. We're not texting. Again, we're not buddies. We just had a class together. And then one day, like 3 years after I'd graduated college, I get a text at 10 at night from a guy named Ken on my phone. I said, "Hey, Ken, you might remember me from one of our classes together." I said, yeah, man, what's up? And he goes, well, to be honest with you, a lot. My life has fallen apart. And my girl just left me, and I don't know what to do, and I got no one to turn to. And I thought of you. I think that guy might have something for me. And I got to give him the hope of the gospel in that moment. Because as he was looking around in his circles, he was going, I just don't know anybody who has anything different or meaningful or helpful to contribute to me. Christian, this is what we're called to be in our culture. We are called to be a city on a hill, a light, salt. This is what we're called to be so that people would look at us and go, hey, go to Sarah, man. You kidding me? Go, hey, I don't know what's going on with you, but I know whatever this girl has, you need some of that. Because she's hopeful even when her life's hard, and she's humble, like I don't see very often. Man, go to Michael. Again, I don't know what you got going, but Michael is kind. Like when he shouldn't be at work, and it's weird, and it kind of freaks me out, but I want you to talk with him, because I bet he would have some solutions for you. This is what's happening. I'm the king of Egypt, but go to Joseph. Go to Joseph. Our world is in need. If you have Jesus, you actually have something to give. Look at these last two verses. Verse 56. So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. I know we're talking about physical food here. We're talking about grain here. I get that, but I just can't help but see the metaphor. When the famine came, it was the child of God who opened up the storehouses. When there was no food in the land, it was God's people that fed. Christian, there is a famine in our land for hope, for truth, for actual peace, for satisfaction. You feel that, right? That is what our culture is in need of. Our world is hungry, and there is no food anywhere except Jesus. There is no food they have to offer but Jesus' food. And we are called as Christians, like Joseph, to open up the storehouses and give people bread. You are called to open the storehouse of truth and give your neighbor bread, the bread of life, your sister or brother, your coworker, the guy who sits by you in class. We're meant to give them real food that actually satisfies. This Friday was Halloween, as you know, and a lot of you guys know what we do at our house is something we call Redeem Halloween. It's a wild time. This year we had like 2,000 people come to our front door. Like, that's not an exaggeration. About 2,000, we give out king-size candy bars. We set up a prayer tent, and we just ask, how can we pray for you all night? And I got to show you this, because this is wild. 3 hours worth of ministering to people. These are the prayer requests we got that night. Look at this. You think the world... We prayed for all of them. We've emailed all of them. You think the world isn't hungry? You think the world doesn't need bread? They need bread. I talked to a guy named Gabriel, college student. He's going, yeah, I kind of grew up Jesus-y, I guess, but I'm kind of looking around now. I'm checking out Hinduism. I'm checking out Islam at the moment. I just get to look at this man and go, what you need is grace. You're not going to find it there. You're going to find it in a man, Jesus Christ. Got to look at him and testify that our world is hungry right now. Our world needs the storehouses open. And I'm just saying, I'm looking around trying to read the cultural moment, and it feels like the time is ripe. Christian, if you didn't feel like pepping your step before, please feel it now. It is time to open the storehouses. It is time to have those conversations. It is time to promote the beauty and worth and forgiveness of King Jesus to a lost and dying and hungry world. Amen. We're blessed to be a blessing. Let's do it.